committed on October 7th and since October 7th against all. Thank you very much.
That was Reem As-Salem, United Nations Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women and Girls, speaking at a briefing organized by the Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People. You've been listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can also make a donation to support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign, now through December 31st.
Hi there, this is Juan Carlos Ordóñez, host of Policy for the People. Before we get to today's show, I want to remind you that we're in the middle of our KBOO Fights Back campaign, focusing on staying loud, proud, and steadfast against fascism. To support our campaign, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to become a monthly sustaining member today. Help us reach our fundraising goal of $75,000. Thanks, and now, on to our show. Welcome to Policy for the People, a show that explores the public policies that can lift up all Oregonians. This show is a collaboration between KMUZ Radio and the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ordóñez.
People's frustrations run deeper than these most recent political battles. Their frustrations rooted in their own daily battles to make ends meet, to pay for college, buy a home, save for retirement. They experience in a very personal way the relentless decades-long trend that I want to spend some time talking about today, and that is a dangerous and growing inequality and lack of upward mobility that has jeopardized middle-class America's basic bargain, that if you work hard, you have a chance to get ahead. I believe this is the defining challenge of our time.
That was then President Barack Obama speaking in 2013 about the dangers posed by the decades-long trend of rising income inequality. So where are we now? What's the latest news on income inequality in Oregon? To explore this, I spoke with my colleague from the Oregon Center for Public Policy, Tyler McGinnis. Tyler is a policy analyst with the center, and he recently published a paper breaking down the most recently available information on income inequality in our state. As Tyler explains, while the most recent figures show that income inequality has eased off a bit from its all-time high, inequality remains vast. Making matters worse, the budget bill enacted by the Republican majority in Congress earlier this year, a bill that included massive tax cuts mainly benefiting the rich, adds fuel to the fire that is income inequality. Here's my conversation with Tyler McGinnis. Hi, Tyler. How are you?
Hi, Juan Carlos. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics to discuss, which is income inequality And you recently published a paper with the latest data on income inequality in Oregon. What is the main takeaway of your analysis?
Well, I think the main takeaway in this report is that income inequality in Oregon remains vast. That's despite the fact that we have seen some tapering off in income for folks at the very, very top of the income ladder in some of the more recent years' worth of data. But even despite that dip, the decades-long trend of rising inequality remains intact. The report also gets into the fact that, you know, a lot of the gains that we saw for workers, particularly in the middle of the income ladder, those were the result of a tight labor market in recent years, particularly in 2020 and 2021. And the labor market today looks very different. Not to mention the fact that this past summer, the Republican majority in Congress enacted the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill. This creates trillions of dollars worth of new and expanded tax cuts over the next decade. And those are overwhelmingly going in favor of the rich. And so that bill in particular is fuel on the fire of this decades-long trend of worsening inequality. So our piece looks at why we think that despite these dips at the top in the recent years' worth of data, that it's too early to say that we've turned the tide on inequality. And in fact, we may see it expand in future years.
So before we get to all the details of your analysis, maybe we should start by defining a key term that we'll be using, which is income and income inequality. Can you define those for us?
Yeah. So when we talk about income, usually we're talking about how much money someone earns. Usually we look at that in like a typical year, right? So most folks work for wages, right? Their labor, they get paid an hourly wage or a salary. And so they make their income in the form of a wage. Some people have earnings from things like capital gains, right? That would be the income generated from the sale of a stock or an investment of some kind. Those are more passive kinds of income. Those are forms of income that we see concentrated amongst folks at the top. When we talk about income inequality, we're talking about the uneven distribution and the increasingly uneven distribution of income throughout our economy. So if we look at all the income, whether it's from wages or capital gains, rental properties, dividends, whatever you want to look at, take that all together and look at who's earning what. And then if we look at that over time, we see an increasing concentration of income earned by folks at the very top. So to give you some examples, the data set that we have at the state level runs from about 1980 to 2023. When we look at the richest one in every 100 Oregonians, that's who we talk about as the top 1%. Back in 1980, the average member of that group was making about $460,000 a year, and that's in inflation-adjusted terms. Fast forward to 2023, the average member of that group is earning more than $1.2 million a year in inflation-adjusted terms. When we look at the typical Oregonian, the Oregonian in the middle of the income ladder, back in 1980, they were earning a little shy of $45,000 a year, again, adjusted for inflation. And by 2023, they were earning a little shy of $50,000 a year. So if we look at the very top, we see incomes have nearly tripled, while over that same span of time, we've seen some, you know, modest gains for folks in the middle, but really have remained stagnant when you consider the fact that that's a 43-year time span, right? And I think it's important to note that the richest 1% didn't become somehow three times more productive over this span of time. But really, this is the fact that we have an economy that is set up that if you own things, if you have assets, you're rewarded in the form of favorable tax rates or other kinds of tax breaks that results in greater concentrations of income.
Why is inequality a problem? Why should the listeners care that we've been seeing this, as you say, uninterrupted trend in terms of rising inequality over the past 4+ decades?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fundamental or foundational issue that has far-reaching implications across our economy, across our society. Fundamentally, it undermines the well-being of Oregonians. We have a situation today where more than 2 in every 5 Oregonians earns too little to be able to regularly afford their basic needs. There are surveys at the national level that are finding that families with young kids, about half of them are facing some sort of economic hardship, right? So we have a situation where families are having a hard time just meeting the basics, and they could stand to have some more income in their family budgets. But when we look at the research more broadly, we find these wide ranging impacts from inequality in other parts of our lives. So, for example, research has found that rising inequality is a driving force behind the rise of chronic illness in our country. As you might imagine, with the cost of copays and rising premiums for healthcare, if you're trying to manage a chronic illness, that becomes very expensive. And if your wages aren't keeping up with the rising cost of your healthcare, people will forego going to the doctor and seeking out the medical care that they need to manage chronic illness. Research has also found that inequality stymies social mobility. So kids who are born into poor families are more likely to remain poor as adults. And research shows that rising inequality can slow overall economic growth, right? It can stymie investment and innovation in our economy. So it has these broad-reaching impacts throughout our society. There's also impacts that on our democracy itself. There's some research into what happens when societies become increasingly unequal. What does that mean if they're a democracy? And one study determined that rising inequality puts societies more at risk of electing leaders who are willing to undermine democratic norms or democratic systems. And I think that may not sound unfamiliar to listeners, given some of the norms that we're seeing the current administration undermine. And so, fundamentally, rising inequality is bad for all of us, regardless of where you land on the income ladder. It undermines our well-being collectively, and it undermines the health of our state economy and society.
Interestingly, President Obama more than a decade ago called income inequality the defining challenge of our time, but it certainly seems, given the data in your report, that we haven't really confronted that challenge. You said earlier that inequality narrowed in the most recent analysis and the most recent data, but we're still facing a very serious gap. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So for context, the most recent data that we are looking at is for the 2023 tax year. And what we see is that the peak in income inequality, at least on record that we have, happened in 2021. And so that's kind of in that economic boom during the early pandemic years, where we saw this massive spike, particularly in capital gains income for folks at the very top. And so we saw, really significant gains for the top 1%, and especially the top 1/10 of the 1% in 2020 and 2021. And in 22 and 23, we've seen a tapering off as that capital gains income has kind of like come back to level, so to speak. So we've seen a tapering off at the top. We also saw during that time in the early pandemic years that there was a tight labor market. Workers were able to demand better wages for their labor. And so particularly in 2020 and in 2021, we saw some real gains for workers at the bottom and the middle of the income ladder. So together, these two dynamics at play create that narrowing that we see in some of the more recent years of data. But when we look back at that longer trend dating back to 1980, the picture is very clear that rising inequality remains vast and remains a challenge for our economy and our state.
Can you talk about how vast it inequality remains?
Yeah. So we talked earlier about some of the gains that we've seen for the richest 1%. I think to really put into perspective how vast inequality is, it's important to kind of hone in on the gains at the very top. So usually we look at the top 1/10 of the 1%, or the richest one in every 1,000 Oregonians. So if we look back to 1980, the average member of this group, the top 1/10 of the 1%, was making about $1.1 million a year in inflation-adjusted terms. And by 2023, they were making about $5 million a year on average. That's down from the peak that we saw in 2021, where they were making nearly $9 million a year, just to give you a sense of like how high that peak got in the wake of COVID.
$9 million?
$9 million in 2021. on average. So compare that to the gains that the Oregonian in the middle saw, right? It was about $45,000 a year in 1980, with an increase to about $50,000 in 2023. So when you consider the nearly five-fold increase for the top one-tenth of the 1% between 1980 and 2023, compare that to the, you know, few thousand dollars that the typical Oregonian saw over that 43-year span, that just gives you a sense of just how vast that gap has become between those at the very top and the Oregonian in the middle. And I will say, you know, up to this point, we've been talking about income inequality, right? We're talking about the money that people earn in a typical year, and that is vast. But when we look at wealth, which is a, you know, kind of zooming out at a broader picture of all the stuff that someone owns, the picture is even more skewed. And so when we talk about wealth, we're talking about all of the things that someone might own. So it could be, you know, homes, it could be businesses, it could be stocks or investments, all of that stuff that has value that they own, minus any of their debts, and, you know, put those things together and you get their net worth or their wealth, right? We've published analysis in recent years that shows that, you know, the three billionaires that have called Oregon home in recent years collectively own about twice as much as the bottom half of all Oregonians combined. So I share that to just say that, you know, income inequality in Oregon is vast, but when we zoom out and look at this broader picture of wealth, we see an even more extreme picture.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Tyler McInnes of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. And we're discussing the findings of his recent report analyzing the latest data on income inequality in Oregon. Let me also remind you that we're in the middle of our KBOO Fights Back campaign, focusing on our community and fighting for our rights. Help us reach our $75,000 goal. Donate today at kboo.fm/give. Or if you're using the KBOO mobile app, just click on the donate button. Thank you. And now, back to the show. Tyler, one of the more interesting data points in the paper is how much more income the typical Oregonian would have if inequality had basically stayed the same as the levels in 1980. How much more income would the typical Oregonian have in that case?
The short answer is they would be earning more than twice what they earned in 2023. So when we look at the gap between the top 1% and the Oregonian in the middle at 1980 levels, had that remained constant through 2023, the typical Oregonian would be earning nearly $130,000 a year. I think the figure is like $128,000 and change. In reality, in 2023, the typical Oregonian was earning less than $50,000 a year. So just, it is an eye-popping figure, right? Just to consider what would life look like for that typical Oregonian had inequality remained constant over that time. And the answer is, you know, folks would have tremendous amounts of income relative to what they have today.
I want to go back to something you said before, and that is that this narrowing of inequality that we've seen in the most recent data may have reversed by now. And why is that?
Well, I think when we look at gains for workers, particularly those at the bottom and the middle of the income ladder in those early pandemic years, those gains were really the result of a tight labor market. This was a time that, you know, listeners may recall this term that was being used, the Great Resignation. Workers at that time, for a variety of reasons, were more willing to quit their jobs. It may have been, you know, unsafe working conditions as a result of the pandemic. It may have been they were suddenly working from home and their work-life balance was preferable and they wanted to maintain a hybrid or a remote work situation. Some people dropped out of the labor force for caretaking responsibilities or health issues during that time, right? There were a variety of reasons in which workers were choosing to leave their jobs. And as a result, employers had to raise wages to attract and retain employees during that time. So in those early pandemic years, we see some real gains in terms of income being earned by folks at the bottom in the middle of the income ladder in particular. But when we look at the data, by like mid-2023 or so, the Bureau of Labor Statistics tracks this thing called the quits rate. It's kind of just looking at, like, you know, the rate at which workers are voluntarily quitting their jobs, leaving the workplace or leaving their job. The quits rate by mid-23 had returned to pre-pandemic levels. So that was a signal that that great resignation era was over. And in the years since, the labor market has continued to soften. We see slow job growth overall. We see increased unemployment rates at levels that we haven't seen since 2021. And we see throughout a variety of sectors in the economy, you know, rounds of layoffs and thousands of jobs being lost in the economy. Meanwhile, in those subsequent years, in 2024 and 2025, we see the stock market continue to rise. And that's long been a good indicator of rising inequality. Research has shown continually that a booming stock market, the gains from a booming stock market are really concentrated amongst those at the very top. So when we look at those signals, you know, again, we don't have the income data yet for 2024 and 2025, but when we look at that, those signals of a softening labor market, a booming stock market, which usually means gains for those at the top, those are indicators to us that we likely have not turned the tide on inequality. And in fact, we may see in future years that inequality has continued to rise.
You mentioned earlier that going forward, things could get worse as a result of actions that Congress took this year. Can you explain to us what Congress did and why this could make matters worse when it comes to income inequality?
Yeah, so earlier this year, the Republican majority in Congress enacted the largest tax cuts in our nation's history, paid for in part by the largest cuts to food assistance and Medicaid in our nation's history, and that's important to note too. But on the tax side, the law cuts about $3.7 trillion worth of taxes over the next decade. And the rich are the main beneficiaries of those tax cuts. So to give you some figures to put this into perspective, next year in 2026, the richest 20% of Americans will together take home about 75% or 75% of all the tax benefits in the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The top 1% alone will take home about 22% of those tax benefits. Meanwhile, the bottom 3/5, the bottom 60% of all Americans together will see about 14% of all the benefits. And the bottom 20% of Americans will see little to no benefit whatsoever. In dollar terms here in Oregon, the average member of the top 1%, that richest one in every 100 Oregonians, they'll see a tax break of about $42,000 next year. The bottom 20% of Oregonians will see a tax break worth about $70.
$70.
70, 70. That's before we take into consideration the cuts to SNAP and Medicaid, right? So someone in that bottom 20% very well may be relying on SNAP to be able to put food on the table. They may need Medicaid to be able to access their health care, right? And so that $70 is nowhere near going to make up for the fact that they can no longer afford groceries on a monthly basis or can't afford their co-pays to go see their physician. The tax bill that was passed by Congress earlier this year is incredibly skewed to the folks at the top, and it will almost certainly make inequality much worse in the years to come. So when we look at these tax cuts that are coming our way for those rich Oregonians, they very likely are going to just, you know, park that money in a place where it can continue to generate more passive income for them, which only fuels this continuing rise of inequality over time.
And it's not hard to predict what happens when you cut taxes for the rich, especially so significantly, and you give small bits to the middle class and low-income Oregonians when it comes to tax cuts. Why do you think Congress, knowing that, move forward in terms of making these tax changes in the H.R. 1, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill?
Unfortunately, I'm not a mind reader. I can't understand the motivations behind all those in Congress who voted for it. But I think, you know, when we look at when we talk about earlier, we mentioned how research has found that increasingly unequal societies are are at risk of becoming less and less democratic. I think this is an example of those in Congress who, you know, have been able to be elected to their position as a result of getting donations from likely rich individuals in their communities. And this is a way of rewarding those folks. It's a form of concentrated power. It continues to kind of concentrate the gains of our economy amongst an ever narrowing group of the haves at the expense of the have nots. It's hard to justify, right? I mean, when we look at the last half a century nearly, we have example after example of these waves of large tax cuts that overwhelmingly favor the rich, with the promise that, you know, that money will trickle down, it's going to spur investment, it's going to do all these great things for the rest of you. But we have nearly half a century of data now to show that just simply doesn't happen.
You point out in your paper that relentless rising inequality is not inevitable, that we've had periods of much lower levels of inequality than we do today. We've had that, we've seen that in the past. Talk to us about what history shows in terms of levels of income inequality and what can be done to address that problem.
Yeah, and I think this is a really important lesson in that we don't have to look far, right, to figure out a way to course correct here, to figure out a way out of this situation. If we look back about a century ago, the country was going through the Great Depression. And in the wake of the Great Depression, we had the New Deal era under President Roosevelt in the 1930s that really set a course on reversing the rising tide of inequality at that time and created a much more prosperous and broader middle class as a result. And that was made possible by raising taxes on the rich, raising taxes on corporations, and strengthening worker power, among other reforms that happened during that time. The new revenues that our country was raising during that time enabled us to, you know, invest in massive public works projects. We put people back to work. We modernized our infrastructure at that time. We created Social Security, which remains our largest social insurance program to this day, nearly a century later. We strengthened the bargaining rights for workers. We gave workers a greater say in the workplace. We set a national minimum wage and a 40-hour work week with overtime protections. There were a number of these reforms that both raised the revenue needed to invest in these long-term investments, like, you know, improving our infrastructure and in strengthening the position of workers in relation to capital. And we saw as a result of that real significant declines in inequality alongside that broadening middle class. If you look at the share of all income that was earned nationally between 1928 and 1976, the share of all income at the national level going to the top 1% declined over that time by nearly 63%. Then in 1980, we see the Reagan administration come in. There are several rounds of tax cuts, and there have been many rounds of tax cuts since then. And we see almost a mirror image of that trend. We see a reversal of what we accomplished over that time. But all that is to say, there is evidence and examples from our own history not so long ago that provide us a way out of this trend and a path forward. We need to be looking to raise revenues by taxing those at the top, taxing corporations, and strengthening the power of workers to make sure that they have a greater say in the workplace.
Tyler, any final thoughts you want to share with us regarding what the latest figures on income inequality here in Oregon show and perhaps what the way forward is?
I think the fundamental lesson or the fundamental takeaway for me from the data here is that none of this is inevitable. I think oftentimes when we think about these massive economic forces at play, it feels overwhelming and daunting, and that We don't have any agency or ability to do anything about it. But we know that that isn't the case. We have evidence from our country's history that there are very clear policy solutions in place that, if enacted, can help us stem the tide on rising inequality, which will have a widespread positive impacts throughout our society. So that's the main takeaway for me, is that we can do something about this. None of this is inevitable. And so we should, you know, take this seriously, and lawmakers, policymakers, all of us as Oregonians should maintain a focus on stemming the tide of inequality for our state.
Well, Tyler, thank you so much.
Thanks, Juan Carlos.
And thank you for listening to Policy for the People. Before we go, please remember to help KABU reach our $75,000 KABU Fights Back campaign goal by showing your support today at kboo.fm/give, or by texting KBOO to 44321. Every donation is appreciated. Thanks, and see you next time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign now through December 31st.
Hello, and welcome once again to Film at 11. I'm talking to Jamie Shepherd, who is an expert in all things Muppet.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for helping us solve this terrible riddle, why the Muppet Christmas Carol is the greatest Christmas movie ever made, despite having seen Die